All right, let's get started on session two. I may need to steal a little bit of time from the Q&A, but we've got more than enough time allocated for that. So let's try to get through these notes in the next hour, if on the outset, hour and a half. But we're going to now look at parenting the younger years from their respective subcategories, infants, toddlers, and then preschool ages. Here in Ephesians 6 verse 4, we have the direct instruction to us as parents, fathers, and I think you know that that is aimed at fathers, not because mothers are off the hook, but because fathers, as the heads of the homes, are responsible primarily for leading their families. And so fathers here, as a broad term, would have implications for the whole household, which means mothers, you need to pay attention to. Do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up or train them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. So let's look at what that looks like when you have infants. Now we're going to use that Ephesians 6:4 as something of the outline for these age categories. We're going to discipline our kids and we're going to instruct our kids. We'll get into more of the technical meaning of those two terms, but if you want to think about it, the two ideas are meant to have overlap, and even in the language they have overlap. But discipline might emphasize a little bit more of the practicalities and instruction, a little bit more of the this is what you need to teach, but nevertheless. Disciplining infants, I think this is where we're going to try and get you some more practical instruction. Just because babies cannot talk does not mean they cannot learn to listen and obey. That is essential. The requirement for your children to listen and obey does not begin when they are toddlers and able to converse. Even babies need to be taught to obey. They're able to comprehend more than they can express verbally, which means they are able to understand your instructions more so than I think you often realize. You let them off the hook far too often because you think, oh, shame, they don't understand. Parents, therefore, need to train their children from infancy, starting with the most basic command. No. Like I said to you, you can see the kids' rebellion when they stiffen up and don't let you change their nappies, or when they take the bottle and they throw it away. That's sinful rebellion, and you should discipline that. We'll get into some of the practice of that in a moment. But you should make sure that you are correcting that kind of rebellious behavior. When they will not listen and obey, you will quickly be able to discern their willful disobedience. You don't have to be a skilled parent with 20 years of experience and 10 kids to boot to see the difference between a baby that cannot grasp the bottle, the hands just don't have the gripping strength, and the baby that is smacking it away because it doesn't want to cooperate, right? One of the key areas you're going to be tested on that, by the way, is sleep. I think we all know that kids go through a lot of developmental issues when they are young, and so Jessica had this cool app where we would track all of the projected developmental leaps. And boy, our kids did not love us. We did not have kids that slept well, okay? So our sanity has been severely impacted as a result. If you hear anything crazy, blame my kids. It's because they broke me psychologically. But even when you account for developmental leaps and ideas like, you know, in the first 3 months, the kid's getting used to an entirely new environment. Even when you account for all that, you're still going to be able to pick up that there are times that your child is not sleeping simply because they're being willfully disobedient. And you need to discern the difference because they do need to be disciplined when it is simply disobedience. Okay? As you tell your baby no, you're also training them in what is acceptable. Whenever we respond with, oh, but they just don't understand. They're too little. But that's exactly why you must discipline. Because if you don't, they will never understand. If you don't teach them, how will they learn? Of course they don't know. So tell them. Teach them. Again, they're able to comprehend so much more than what you realize. Their brains are sponges. They're picking up social cues, vocabulary, and especially your standards in the home. Where are the lines that they must not cross? And how far can they push you towards those lines? They're testing you. And if you just give them a hall pass, you know, go, no, it's fine. They're babies. Babies do that. You're making a rod for your own back. You are setting up your child to behave in a way that is going to be harder to deal with in older years when they are toddlers and preschoolers. Even from infancy, therefore, you must be diligent to discipline your child's sinful attitudes and actions. Attitudes and actions. This includes, to be very plain, so you know what we're talking about, we're not just throwing out vague ideas, spanking your baby. Now, I don't know if spanking is the word that you're used to. I'm going to use spanking because it seems like the most universally accepted. In my home growing up, we would get hidings. I think that's a fairly South African term, but whatever. Spanking is just easier. It's going to be in the books that you read anyway, so spanking for now, but you know what I mean. So I put this quote in here, not because it's necessarily profound. I just want you to know that I'm not crazy. I'm not the only one who's saying to you, I think you should spank your infant, right? Now, that doesn't mean that you need to take the shambok and give them six stripes across the rump, right? So this is from a wonderful book. At the end of this, I'll show you a couple of books that I would really recommend from Martha Peace and Stuart Scott, called The Faithful Parent, A Biblical Guide to Raising a Family. And both Martha and Stuart recommend that you begin by spanking your own hand. It just makes the noise. It associates the action with a consequence for your baby. And in the beginning, you do that and you're gonna startle them. And that's sufficient just to give them the idea. That action produced that consequence. That is a warning for them of what's going to happen to them. Because eventually you're going to progress rather quickly from spanking your own hand to spanking their hand. Now, whether you call that a spank or a pop, or it doesn't matter. For an infant, the hand is a far more accessible body part to smack. Using your hand on their hand also gives you a good tactile feedback to know whether it's too hard or too soft, right? You don't want to bruise your baby. That being said, again, if the child is foolish enough to disobey while their nappy is getting changed and their bum is in full view, I mean, they're asking for it, okay? Just a little pop on the backside and they know exactly what they need to do to change. So don't be afraid to discipline your infant. Again, as you can see, even in the quote here, it looks different, right? So it's on the hand and not always on the bum. And it's a light tap. That's all that is necessary. Just enough to give that sensation of stinging on the hand, right? If you've left a mark that is there for the next couple hours, even if it doesn't bruise, like if your finger outlines are there for the next couple hours, you've done it too hard. You just want to create a sensation of pain, right? Because that's what consequences do. That's what discipline does. That's what spanking or hidings are meant to inflict. Pain. Disobedience brings pain, right? Especially as a first-time parent, if you're ever in doubt, let me just say, err on the side of mercy and give your baby the benefit of the doubt. Even though we want to emphasize the importance of being diligent to discipline, if you must fall on one side or the other, rather make sure that you are under disciplining than over-disciplining. And just so that I'm not misunderstood, you will accomplish far more by disciplining consistently the clear acts of disobedience and overlooking the unclear ones than for you to decide, I'm not going to let them fool me once, and then over-discipline and do what the scriptures call exasperate your child. Make them feel like your system is unjust, even as a baby. Right? So if there's any doubt, err on the side of mercy. But do not use that as an excuse to go like, yeah, I'm not 100% sure. You know, we don't have a television replay of that incident, so maybe we just give them the benefit of the doubt. Don't use that as an excuse for parental laziness. But understand the principle, right? It's like a tightrope. You can fall off on either side. Many parents protest that their babies are too young to understand, but it is through your faithful and diligent discipline that they learn to understand, as I've said. And as always, the principle is, while you are angry, do not discipline. So rather calm down. You will cause harm instead of do good when you discipline in your own anger. So don't walk around with a swagger at church and be like, man, I discipline consistently. I am like the discipline police. Nothing gets past me. But you've done it in anger almost every single time. You haven't taught your child about a righteous God who expects obedience as an act of worship because he deserves it. You taught your child that you are an unjust tyrant and that life in your world is going to be horribly unfair. So don't discipline in anger. If you're disciplining in anger, it tells you that you are doing it not because you are concerned in love that your child has sinned against God, but you're concerned in selfishness that they have disobeyed you. Your sinful anger, when you discipline, demonstrates that it is about you, not about God. So don't do that. It doesn't mean that you can't change, so calm down, prayerfully reorient your heart, and then discipline. Don't let them get away with it just because you responded initially in anger, right? But how do we instruct our infants? Again, I've said before, a child is never too young to begin the process of faithfully training them through biblical instruction. It is, of course, going to look different. But you can read books to your baby. You can sing songs to your baby. You can listen to music with your baby. You can set a good example for your baby of praying, especially before meals. And so all that is meant to say this. There are things that you expose your baby to every single day. So make sure that you are using those instruments to expose them to good things and right things and godly things and not the opposite, not worldly things. Like if your infant is awake in a bouncy chair, right? Don't let them watch rap music videos with skinny clad girls and violence. Why? Sorry, man. You don't think that they are old enough to understand, but that influences them. If you have music on, don't, again, you can listen to pagan, worldly music. You're like, they don't understand the words. It doesn't matter. These are my jams. This is how I de-stress after the night you gave me. Or you can listen to God-glorifying music that will not only be good for your heart, but it just, it's how you train them. And again, you can read stories to your kids. I hope you do. Reading to your children is an important part of their development, just as human beings. But what you read to them is what distinguishes you as a Christian parent from a non-Christian parent. Every parent is going to read to their kid. But read good stories. Read the best stories. And you can read Bible stories too, right? Now, I'm not asking you to talk about, all right, my girl, can you see God's sovereign choice of election here between Jacob and Esau? You have no hope outside of God's sovereign mercy. But, you know, read them Bible stories. And we live in an age where there is an abundance of resources. Even here in South Africa, where we don't have access to all the cool things they have in other countries. Augustine Book Room is filled with amazing books for babies. Even those hardcover, cardboard-page books, there are wonderful, wonderful books. If you want to teach your kid the alphabet, they have an alphabet that has associations with biblical concepts. So you can use the normal one, and that's fine, but you're missing the opportunity to go, L is for love, or B is for Bible. I mean, you can teach them that B is for baboon, or you can teach them that B is for Bible. And I'm not trying to lay down law here. It's not like if we go in there, we're like, that looks like that's from Fisher-Price, man. That's worldly. Okay? But you get the idea, right? Don't think that infancy lacks any opportunity to instruct your kid. It's filled with opportunities. They talk about the music that you enjoy as an adult being the music that you were exposed to as a kid, right? So there are all those generational wars of like, oh, Dad, I can't believe you listened to that. I mean, I still love listening to the Beach Boys. And some of you are like, you're an idiot. All my respect is gone for you. But that's what my dad used to listen to. This weird mix of the Beach Boys and country music. And so I enjoy it because it's what I listened to in our home growing up. And so let that kind of influence be a godly influence. It doesn't mean you can't listen to the best of secular music. It just means do everything with thought and intention. Is this worth doing as a family? And if so, let's do it well. I remember going to one of the parenting courses at Grace Community Church, and there was a couple there. The husband was an elder. He was a federal judge, and his wife was a professional opera singer, Carlos and Grace Chung. And Grace has the voice of an angel. I mean, she's incredible. Classically trained professional opera singer, and they had boys. And I remember in a Q&A, she was talking about how she lets her kids listen to rap. And everyone's like, that is weird. And she explained, it's not about the kind of music. She wanted them to listen to the best of that music. Most hip-hop is trash. Most rap is trash. But there is really excellent hip-hop. And so she's like, fine, if you want to listen to that, go for it. But find the stuff that is excellent and is God-glorifying. So if you want to listen to opera, wonderful. But do it with that kind of intentionality to say, you know, even if this is secular music, I want you to listen to the kind of music that reflects the creativity of a God who has designed the world to make melodies like this. I want to expose you to beauty so that you learn about the beauty of the one who made this for us. It's about being thoughtful and intentional in what you do. Okay. Also, I just like the excuse that I get to buy more books from Augustine Book Room because it's for the kids, man. I mean, okay. It isn't too early, and I said this earlier, to say things to your kids like, you need to obey with a happy heart. And again, that's not because I imagine my two-month-old understands that, but it's because I want my six-month-old or my 12-month-old to understand that I say it now. If I say it from months 2 to 12, by the time they're a toddler, they will know what daddy means when he says, happy heart. All right. And again, just to be really honest, when we are tired, it is so easy to compromise, right? So often we are in survival mode. And like I said, our kids don't love us, did not love us, slept horribly. And so I know from experience what it is to get really bad sleep. Jessica, unless she gaslights me, and maybe one day she'll confess her sin, but she sleeps through it all. She doesn't hear the kids. Oh. Right? See, this one, I have fallen for a psyop that has been running for the last 12 years in our marriage. And so it was never a case of, you know, sometimes you ask the dad, you're like, how's your kid sleeping? He's like, great. The mom's got like bloodshot eyes. She's like, yeah. Right? I got up every time because I would get the kid, bring it to Jessica, and take the kid back. So I got up twice for every time the kid woke up. So I know what it is to have interrupted sleep. I remember one time, like, I've got Matthew in my arms. He's screaming. And I'm literally holding him next to Jessica's ear, like right here. And she's still, wake up. Anyway. But not only is this the time that we often compromise in what we ought to be doing, but again, true confessions, this is when we respond in sinful attitudes and actions of our own, right? So there's actually a really helpful chart that comes out of that book by Martha Peace and Stuart Scott. It's in your notes. They want to show you what middle of the night sinful thoughts look like and what agape love. In other words, I am going to love my child and serve their best interests instead of selfishly thinking, how dare you do this to me, right? And I think you all know we have those thoughts. Why don't you love me? Why is God against me? Why is my spouse so selfish, right? You all think you're fine. And then you get married, you're like, I'm actually a selfish person. And then, you know, you're a year or two, you're like, okay, but, you know, we got those rough edges polished off, and I'm a pretty decent person now. And then you have your first kid, and at 3 a.m, you're like, no, I'm still selfish. Okay, so I can't take this any longer. I'm sure you've said that. But this is hard. God will give me the grace to endure as love endures all things is a more godly way to approach this. I wish he had never been born. That sounds harsh, but I think in the deepest, darkest, most sleep-deprived moments, if we haven't said that, we have perhaps thought that. He is a blessing from God, though, and one way he is a blessing is to help me grow as a Christian. I am glad he was born. Now, I've joked about my kids not loving me, but the reality is I am a less selfish, more servant-hearted husband and father because of the trials of my sleepless children, right? Why is God doing this to me? I've thought that many times. You know when my kids had the worst nights of sleep? Saturday night. The one night that I'm like, Lord, I have to preach in the morning. Why are my kids not doing this? Why are they not sleeping? Or, I mean, there have been some really rough weeks and rough Sundays where I literally get to bed at 3 a.m. on Saturday, Sunday morning. I'm like, great, I have from 3 until 6 to get some sleep. And I don't know if you've worked late at night. Often it takes a while to come down from that adrenaline high, right? So it's not like I get in and at 3 I fall off. So after like 30 minutes, 40 minutes, I'm just about to drop off. And then you get woken up again by the kid and you're like, oh, God, why? But the Lord is testing me tonight and giving me a special opportunity to show love and to grow in God's grace. And this makes me so mad. I mean, if you don't say that, you certainly demonstrate that. But you can replace it with, I chose to be mad. I am not forced by anyone else. The you made me mad idea is actually wrong. No one made you angry. That was your sinful choice. Love is kind, and I can show love to my baby by getting up and tenderly caring for her. Or I'm too tired to give anymore. Can be replaced with the faithful servant serves in the daytime or the night. I will pray and ask God to help me. Those, I don't expect you to give a textbook answer in the middle of the night. But those are the ways that we need to think. As much as what our children need to be trained, we need to be trained. And so it's just helpful to go through those and to recognize the, if you're struggling with number 3, why is God doing this with me? Then spend the day meditating on the replacement thought and what you should be thinking. Because the reality is, when you wake up at 2 in the morning, you're not going to be thinking that, all right? Unless you've trained your own mind to think that. You can have this next to your bed. It's not that you're like, okay, I'm just going to have a quiet time before I respond to you. Love is patient. Love is kind. Thank you, Lord. Love is patient, right? That's not the moment. That's not the time. And so spend the daylight hours preparing yourself for the nighttime hours. Spend the easy time preparing for the hard time. Train your heart as much as what you train your child's heart. And then common sense tips. This is just for infants. Make sure you get enough sleep. So go to bed instead of staying up late. All right? And I know how tempting that is when it's been a hard day and you are so strung out and maybe you relax differently, but it's just so nice to sit in bed with your spouse and watch, like binge watch a series. But then you're doing that until like really late. That's not so smart. You're setting yourself up for failure, right? So be wise as to how much sleep you get. And if possible, and this is to the moms especially, you should take some time to rest during the day. That's not copping out. That's not a wuss option. Like if you've got young kids who are interrupting your sleep, like sleep is really, really important, okay? I wish our kids knew that. But we don't get the sleep that we should be getting unless the Lord's favor is upon you, in which case my heart envies you, okay, just to be honest. But for the most part, we have interrupted sleep and not the sleep that we should be getting. And so there's nothing soft or compromising about saying, you know what, I'm going to take a 45-minute nap or an hour's nap in the middle of the day. When the kid goes down, you go down. And I know when you got multiple kids, that gets more challenging. But you do what you got to do because it is important. And you don't have to pretend to be a superhero who can work off 3 hours of sleep a night and then go through the day like nothing happened. We don't do that with anything else. It's not like we're like, yeah, so I ran a half marathon yesterday, and now I'm just going to pretend that I don't need to rest at all. Of course you need to rest. And if you had an exhausting night, you need to rest the next day. At the same time, and to wives especially, you really need to tell your husband when you need extra help. A, husbands, you should have your powers of observation finely tuned, but also, wives, just so you know, no matter how observant your husband is, he's never going to be able to read your mind. So if you've had a hard day and you need extra help, you need to tell him, right? There is, of course, a balance there. And we can talk about that during the Q&A as well. Because husbands, you need to be sacrificial, servant-hearted, and die to self and live to serve your wife. And so sometimes that means you don't get all the sleep that you need to get, that you would like to get. Or sometimes you don't get the opportunity to rest and just catch your breath after getting home from a hectic day of work. You walk in the door and you just... Your second job starts, man. And that one, don't pay overtime. But there we go. That is what it is. At the same time, wives, this is your job. And you do have hard days. But your husband isn't there to make sure that every day of yours is easy. Because he has hard days at work too. And so there are days where he comes home and he's like, it was a hard day at work. But he didn't expect you to go to the office and do the work for him. Sometimes you need to recognize that today was a hard day. Because every job is a hard day from time to time. And this is your job. This is primarily your responsibility as you care for the baby in the younger years. But as with all things, there is a balance. And so much of the balance is determined by the heart attitude that goes into it. Whether you are being selfish or not. Husbands, there may be a time that it is right and reasonable for you to get home and say, you know what? I need 30 minutes before I jump in here because I'm going to be just in a much better frame of mind. Like if you've had one of those meetings where your boss has just read you the riot act, I mean, he is torn into you, right? You come home, you've just been beat up by your boss. You feel like your job is hanging on the line. You are in no state to come home and just immediately pour yourself out in sacrificial love. It's not wrong for you to say to your wife, I need 30 minutes. If I can gather myself, I will be in a much better position to love you and serve you. That's not selfish because you're trying to serve the family and give the best that you are to them. But there are other times that it's just easier. And now you're just being selfish because it's comfortable. You're like, my wife is so understanding. I can just come home and kick off my shoes and she doesn't even complain because she's working really hard at not being needy. And so I'm just totally going to abuse that. Don't be selfish. And wives, it goes the other way as well. There are times that you've had the worst day and then your husband should come in and be like, you know what? Give me the baby. I'm going to run you a bath. You spend the next hour in there soaking your troubles away. By the time you come out, supper will be ready. The baby will be fed. And you just get to breathe. All right? So it's a balance. And it's all about your attitudes. So much of what we've said here does revolve around sleep. And so your baby does need to be trained to go to sleep, A, and to stay asleep. But this is where you need to make a personal decision as parents as to how you're going to do that. Every child needs to be trained. I'm not saying you need to sleep train your kids so that you let them cry it out until they self-soothe and go to sleep. What I am saying is you need to train your child in whatever way you believe is good and right. We did not sleep train our children like that. Evidently, you can tell from my war stories. But that doesn't mean that we didn't train our kids to sleep or to go to sleep at appropriate times or stay asleep for appropriate times. Okay? The schedule can be helpful, especially for you moms when you are at home managing everything. But don't ever be slavishly don't ever feel like you have to slavishly follow it. A schedule is a tool. It is not chains that bind you so that you cannot do anything else. It's meant to serve you. You are not meant to serve it. At the end of the day, I think it's worth saying what Psalm 127 says, "Behold, children are an inheritance of Yahweh. The fruit of the womb is a reward. Like arrows in the hand of a warrior, so are the children of one's youth. How blessed is the man, or how blessed is the woman who fills his quiver with them. There will not be ashamed when they speak with enemies in the gate." There's a reason why every time we give out a blanket at church, I keep saying babies, children, are blessings. They are not burdens. They are good things. There are certainly times that they don't feel like that. That is the reality. This is what God says. If you want to dispute that, your argument is not with me, it's with God. And so there is a reward. There is a blessing in this little infant who's turned your world upside down, filled it with so many challenges, but it's a good thing. And you should be happy. Your overall experience of the infant season should be positive, should be happy. You should feel like it's a blessing. Yes, there will be hard days and hard nights and times that you are really wondering how this could be a blessing. But when you step back and you look with the benefit of hindsight, you should go, you know what? It really was. And that shouldn't only be an experience in hindsight, it should be an experience in the midst of it as well, too. There's a reason, a wonderful reason why they are so cute. Because when you've had the worst nights, you wake up, you pick them up, and they smile at you, and all of a sudden, you haven't got a care in the world, right? So, it is a blessing. Let's talk about toddlers. Every time you have a new parent, they're like, this is the hardest season. There is no season harder than the season. And then they move to the next season, they're like, I wish we could go backwards, right? Because you have an infant, you're like, oh, that was a real challenge. And then you have a toddler, you're like, oh my goodness, I would trade this for nappies any day of the week. How do you discipline toddlers again? Well, a two-year-old or a three-year-old must be taught to obey the first time you give him or her an instruction. First-time obedience becomes an important standard for you to train your toddler in, right? You'll see how we emphasize this again and again and again. Listen, if you're not picking it up already, let me just say it outright. Parenting, especially the younger years, is actually simple. There aren't profound and complicated principles. It's just simple things that we need to stick to. Like in the toddler season, your children need to be trained in first-time obedience. Okay? Now, Ginger Hubbard, and I'll point out her book to you at the end, offers great wisdom on this point in her book called Don't Make Me Count to Three. One of the things she argues, and she's right, is that when we take other approaches like, I'm going to count to three, don't make me count to three, all you've taught your kid is that they have until the count of three. They don't need to obey you first time. They've got a grace period. Same thing, same principle. When you warn them, I'm warning you now, right? Don't let your warnings teach your child that they don't have to obey you the first time. Warnings, again, we'll talk about it in the Q&A, warnings precede disobedience. They encourage obedience. You know, sometimes your kids are not the masterminds that they think they are. You can see exactly what's coming. You're like, I got you, man. I'm tracking you. And that's when you preemptively warn them and say, now, are you doing that with the right attitude? Are you being diligent to do what Dad asked you to do now? Is that the kind way that you know you should be speaking to your brother? But that goes before disobedience. Warnings encourage obedience preemptively. They don't excuse a failure to obey the first time. Once there is disobedience, there must be consequence. Okay? By the age of two or three, a toddler, a child, should be taught, no, stop, come, sit, quiet. This is your bread and butter in this season. These are the commands that you want to emphasize because they make life so much more manageable. Like number five, this is, I know, one that many of you are in the midst of struggling with. Kids at church, if they are taught from Monday to Saturday that there are seasons or there are periods that they need to be quiet, they will be able to be quiet eventually at church. It doesn't flip like a switch. It's training. It takes time. But you train them during the week for what comes on Sunday. And if your child can learn the skill of being quiet for an hour, all of a sudden church becomes so much more manageable. Your life goes from the suffocating struggle where you don't feel like you can accomplish anything to all of a sudden you're like, oh, I can do that now. I can go back to church. I can actually kind of listen and participate. Or come, going to the shops, moms, by yourself. I remember there were not many times that Jessica wanted to do that by herself. But going to the shops by yourself when you have a toddler can be hard because if you let them out of the trolley, they might want to run free, right? Yeah. Oh boy. Yeah, there's an ad. I don't know if if you guys have seen it. It's an old ad. It's one of those like band ads of a kid going through the store, pulling the cans out, screaming, crying, I want this, I want this. It's a condom ad. Kind of dodgy, but kind of funny at the same time. You don't want your kid to be that kid, right? You want it to be easy to go to the shops, and you can't always put them in the trolley. And so sometimes you need to be able to walk with them next to you. And a three-year-old should be able to do that. And when you move on and your kid is focused on something on the shelf, you should be able to say, Susie, come. It makes it easier for you, okay? So, important commands. But what's the standard of obedience? Well, number one, obedience should be all the way. Obedience should be right away. And obedience should be with a joyful heart. Now, for the sake of time, I'm not going to elaborate on those too much, but I think you understand. Obedience should be all the way. Partial obedience is disobedience. If I ask you to clean up your room and you put away everything except for that tub of blocks, that is disobedience. Partial obedience is disobedience. In the same way, delayed obedience is disobedience. When I give you an instruction, that is when you should start responding with obedience. Not when you feel like it, not when it's convenient to you, not when you're done with the thing that you're doing, right? So obedience is all the way, it is right away, and it is with a joyful heart. And that's how we teach our kids obedient attitudes. Philippians 2 verse 14 says, do all things without grumbling or disputing. In the Legacy Standard Bible, I think other translations have it grumbling or complaining, which is perhaps an easier thing for a kid to understand. And so, you know what? That's a wonderful verse that helps you understand what the correct standard for your kid is, but it's also simultaneously a great teaching tool. So, teach your kid this verse. Say it to them over and over and over again. Johnny, how does God want you to obey? Do all things without grumbling or complaining. Are you complaining? Do you have a good attitude? Do you have a joyful heart like God wants you to have? All of a sudden, you've not only been taught by one verse what you need to do, but you've also been given the tool to do it. Use the verse to teach your kid, to train your kid. All right, that's how you train them, not only in actions, but in attitudes. When there are sinful attitudes, especially, it is so easy here to take the easy way out. Just go, you know what? At least he's tidying up the room. At least he's putting his clothes in the wash basket. At least he's going to the bath. It doesn't matter that he stomped his feet and stared death stares at me all the way. Just trying to get supper going. I've got a lot going on right now. At least he has complied. Attitudes matter. And like I said to you, there are so many times, and again, Jessica and I have learned this the hard way, where we'll look at each other and we'll say, I think we're making a rod for our own backs here. Like, we have fallen into the easy way of doing things, and it's become a habit now after repeating that a couple of days in a row. And we're like, man, if we don't stop this now, we're going to pay for it in the future. So those attitudes matter. We better get on top of that and discipline that. Also, when you are dealing with your toddler, they sin in the most inconvenient times, don't they? I think we need to recognize that God is sovereign over that. And so there are times that you're on the phone, that you are out for tea with a friend, that you are at church trying to listen to the sermon, and your kid is sinning at the worst time. Again, I think there is a balance in wisdom. You need to discipline your child, recognizing that though it's inconvenient, God is the one who's ordered these circumstances. And so you need to respond the way that God wants you to respond by diligently disciplining your kid. At the same time, we are also in circumstances where that's not always possible, or that's not always best practice. And this is where consistency is going to save you. Consistency and persistence. You cannot, in the middle of spar, bend your kid over your knee and smack their bum, right? It's not possible. So how do you deal with a toddler that is sinning when you're out in public? Well, if you have been diligent, if you've been consistent and persistent, then your kid will know when you say to them, I'm going to give you the consequence when we get home. They'll know it's not an empty threat. They'll know it's not an idle manipulation. If you are consistent and persistent, but if you are not, they'll go, yeah, mom will probably forget. It's fine. Dad will get distracted and he'll move on. Consistency is key. Same thing when you're, if you're a church. But you need to have discernment to judge which way to go. I remember the group of friends that we had at Grace Community Church, was the moms were super diligent on this. They would discipline every single time, no matter where they were, no matter what they were doing. And so there would often be social engagements where we would hardly see the mother, because like every 5 minutes she's up and she's disciplining, up and disciplining, up and disciplining. I'm actually not convinced that that is the best way to do it, right? I think there are seasons, I keep using the word season incorrectly. I think there are periods of time in which it's not always the best practice, where sometimes you need to recognize this is not the appropriate circumstance, but your diligence in other periods allows you the leeway in that circumstance. So if you've made a special plan to go out and see someone that you hardly see, you haven't seen them in the last 6 months, and you've got an hour or two with them, yeah, it's okay to say to your kid, you know what, we're not going to deal with this now. We will deal with this when we get home. But if you're hanging out with someone that you see multiple times a week, and it's, especially if it's someone from church that you know and you trust, and they're not going to judge you, and you're like, would you mind if I go and deal with this? Then don't let the opportunity go by. Take them to the bathroom and go deal with it, right? Discern the circumstance that you're in and respond appropriately. But the default needs to be diligence. In other words, consistency and persistence, that buys you the leeway in other circumstances. Well, yo.
I know we're dealing with toddlers here, but do you think all toddlers would understand if there's a delay? It's something we've thought of, like, will he know? And I think where he is now, I think we're more comfortable at some time, like, understanding. But, how do you judge when you think your child will comprehend?
Sure.
I did something an hour ago and I'm getting the spanking.
Sure. For it. Again, you know your child best, and so you will be able to judge better than any of us. Certainly, the older they get, the more they can make that association. There are times that I do think it is seriously unwise. Like if you're out in public, it is actually illegal to spank your child, right? And all it takes is for some blue-haired liberal quack to phone and lay a complaint, and now you're in a world of trouble. So I think the general principle is, if you're out in public, don't spank your child. And so if you're in the middle of Woolworths and your kid is having an epic meltdown, then you either have to say to them, we'll deal with this at home. And if they don't make that connection, that is the lesser of two evils. Or if it's a real extreme situation, sometimes, I know moms are going to hate this, you need to park the trolley in the middle of the aisle, take the kid and be like, all right, we're going. But then, and I check your heart, make sure you don't do this when you're sinfully angry, I do think it is appropriate to say, you know what? Not only did you disobey, but as a consequence of your disobedience, mommy couldn't get us food. And so your disobedience was significant. Therefore, there are going to be greater consequences. I'm not trying to say lash out in frustration, but there is a greater gravity to your sin. So instead of one spank, you're going to get two spanks, or whatever the case may be, right? So sometimes it's the lesser of two evils. Say, you know what? On the big picture, out of 100 days in a row, if this is the one day where we're inconsistent because it happened in public, let that be the lesser of two evils. But if it's really extreme, then stop what you're doing and go home. Okay? Yep. All right. Proverbs 13:24, he who holds back his rod hates his son, but he who loves him disciplines him. All right? By this age, we're not doing pops anymore. It's not slaps on the hands anymore. Unless it is a necessary exception to the rule. Sometimes when you're out of the shops, you can get away with a little smack on the hand like that. No one's looking, just bomb. Warning shot, all right? But for the most part, you should be doing spanking, hidings, right? The spanking can be either done by your hand or by another instrument. And this is going to depend radically on the age of your child, the personality of your child, even the sex of your child, right? And we'll get into the mechanics of that in a moment. The spank should be hard enough to sting, but not hard enough to bruise or to leave a lasting mark. How do you know it's hard enough? Well, you don't want it to be too soft that it's meaningless, right? It must cause pain. And so, to be honest, if you're spanking on the bum and there's no red mark afterwards, you probably haven't done it hard enough. But that red mark should quickly fade, right? It shouldn't be a lasting mark that is there for hours, and it most certainly should not bruise. So if you're bruising, if you're welting, it's too hard. It's too much. And that also, by the way, goes for, this isn't exactly your question, John, but sometimes you have kids who, they've just, for whatever reason, entered into a battle of the wills with you. And they are challenging you, and they're willing to pay the price. Right? Okay. They will take hiding after hiding in order to break your will and show you that they are the ones who run this family. And then you need to meet their challenge and make sure that your will does not break first. So if we're going to do, if you're like, all right, sometimes, and again, this is often the moms in this season, because often mom is at home while dad is at work. We can talk in Q&A if anyone is curious. If you're working from home, dads, I think there's a little bit more of a dynamic we need to discuss. But for the most part, moms, sometimes you just need to recognize, all right, today's the day. Today's the day that we are not going to get laundry done. The dishes are going to stay in the sink. I'm going to phone my husband and be like, I need you to get takeaways on the way home because I can't cook today because your son. And I know, yes, it's your son. Your offspring has decided to challenge my will today. Right? And then it's spank after spank after spank. But I do think, and I'll argue this passionately against others that might take a different approach, we need to recognize that eventually, that is, no matter, even if you're doing it at the right force, eventually the accumulated effects of those spanks are going to start to bruise, are going to start to welt. I mean, eventually, 10, 12, 15 spanks are going to start adding up. I think by the time that you start bruising or welting, you need to back off. And so even if that means that today, okay, we've hit our limits. Okay, if I start hitting you anymore, you're going to bruise. Take the loss. Because you're fighting the war, you're not fighting the battle. Okay? So make sure you're not wussing out. Don't give up before then. Be consistent. Like I said, if today's the day, you're like, all right, it's on. Like Donkey Kong. Let's go, boy. But don't ever physically harm your child through the discipline that you impose. If you need to stop the spanking, by the way, that doesn't mean that you have to stop the discipline. Because then you can impose other consequences. Right? Take toys away. Take books away. No watching TV. Or, you know, maybe you, whatever it is, you don't get to eat the nice supper that we are having. You get a peanut butter sandwich, you go to bed. Yes. Totally.
I know you're yeah. Dream, but like, and maybe vomit.
Yeah.
I'm going to vet in the hospital.
Right. I think that is a good use of the timeout. So where the timeout supplements the physical discipline instead of being the cop-out to replace it, right? Because you're right. At some point, you have things that you need to do, and at some point, you can't keep hitting. So if one of the supplemental consequences is, all right, we've hit our limit. I can't do this anymore, so now we're going to do alternate strategies. You sit in the playpen or you sit in the cot, and I'm going to close the door. You scream. I'm going to turn on some music. You do you, all right? Do that. I think that is a valid approach, as long as, like I said, that's not your primary approach. If that's a supplemental approach, do it. If they want to vomit in tantrum, and I know you're not exaggerating, because some kids do that. Like, some kids are just like, all right, I've got another tool in my mouth. What you gonna do now? All right, that's okay. And then, to be very blunt, then there are consequences. They play in their mess, and that's gross. And I, even though kids are nasty, I don't think you're gonna enjoy that. So I'll clean it up afterwards, but you will lose. Eventually, you will lose. Your kid needs to know that no matter how much, how often they challenge you, at the end of the day, they will lose. You will win. Okay? Once more, it's essential you don't discipline your child in anger. Some of my favorite proverbs. I swore that I would do this, and I haven't, and I somewhat regret it, but there's still time. I said I would put these on canvas and hang them on our boys' walls. But Proverbs 22:15, folly is bound up in the heart of a child. The rod of discipline will remove it far from him. I love that. And honestly, sometimes I say that to our boys. I'm like, there is foolishness in your heart. How do we get foolishness out of the heart of a child? I'm like, with hidings. You made the choice, not me. Okay? Proverbs 23:13-14, do not withhold discipline from the child. Although you strike him with a rod, parents, if you're worried, I think this is especially for you, he will not die. Okay? You are not going to damage him or her or harm them in a lasting fashion. In fact, you shall strike him with a rod and deliver his soul from Sheol. In other words, if you're worried about harming your child, think about eternal consequence and then remember that they may not go to bed tonight happy with you. They may go to bed angry with you because they despise your discipline. You are doing what is good and right for the greater good. They're not dying, right? No matter how much they're screaming, they're not dying. I've also had to say that, by the way, one of our kids especially, the unnamed middle one, he is dramatic. Like when he gets a spank on the bum, he screams like he's dying, and he will get a consequence for doing that as well. So he'll get one for the original infraction, and then this another one if he's dying. Getting dramatic, yeah, acting like he's dying. It's not helpful. It's a form of emotional manipulation and deceit. You are deceiving now because it is not as sore as what you're making out to be, and it creates other problems. You know, if you don't have a lot of space, your neighbor's here. And that's not helpful, right? So, no, you don't get to scream and cry like someone's just stabbed you. It also means you can then discipline in other places when they don't scream like they're dying, like at church. You can just go into the bathroom and be like, bah, it's over, it's done. You can cry because it hurts, but you're not like, ah! Okay? You are not dying. Yes.
Mm-hmm. The reaction after the spank.
Yes.
Is there a place for like constraining?
Like physically?
Physically,
I think, yes, there is a place for physically constraining them. I think it's important that they learn to submit to your will in the early years, because as they get older, that gets harder, okay? In the beginning, with our boys, and I remember it especially with Matthew, he would resist, he would fight. But I'm like 20 times his size. And so I would make him bend, and I would physically push him down on the bed and then spank him. So I'm holding him down so that he's not fighting or flailing. It is actually also for his good, because if he's moving, I might miss and hit something else. Like if I swing and I hit you on the wrist, that's going to hurt and harm. So it looks rough. It sounds rough. But I made it clear to him in the beginning, if I say bend, you better bend. And if you don't, you're going to get additional consequences for not bending. And so, are you able to get our thing for me, please? And so, it just, oh, love. Jessica?
Yeah?
I'll do it later, don't worry.
Okay.
I'll show you the instrument that we use. Ours is just a nice thick piece of wood with holes drilled in the middle, and it is the greatest instrument ever. Different families have got different approaches. I do not do the machine gun. Right? Some moms go off and you just hear it. It's like, bah, 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 bah. It's like 10 that they rattle off, full auto. Just, bah, 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 bah. Impressive. I'm more of a quality over quantity guy. Like, this is gonna come and it's gonna hurt. But then it's also great because it's once and done, right? For our kids, 2 is hard. 3, the other day Matthew got 3 and he knew, like, this is like end of the world because it's already tender and 2 more are coming, right? But it's quick, it's effective. Anyway, to answer your question, yes, there is a time. I would limit that, though, strictly to when you're at home. If you're having to physically restrain your child when you're out, you either need to take the L and then deal with it when you're at home, or you need to pick him up and leave. And I know you can't always do that. Like, if you're at church, you know, imagine if Tim's preaching and you're, like, physically, you're like, I can't. He's got the keys in his pocket. I can't go anyway. So you're like, okay, that's fine. You win this round. I'll win ultimately, but I'm not going to wrestle you in public. At home, for sure. The important thing is you train them to submit to that in the beginning, because I don't want to fight you. You know, even Matthew's age now, so he's 7. I don't want to be fighting a 7-year-old. I don't want to be fighting a 9-year-old or a 10-year-old. I want you to bend when I say bend. And so, yeah, fight that battle now. Make sure you win that war now. When you restrain them, make sure that you do it in a way that is not going to harm them. And I probably also say, by the time you need to physically fight your child, as much of that as possible should be done by the dad, right? So sometimes moms have to do it, but it's always better. Like, if dad's around, if he's working from home, I don't think you should interrupt dads. Like, if they're working in the office from home, I don't think every discipline needs to be done by dad. In fact, I think sometimes it's counterproductive. But if you need to wrestle the kid, get dad out of the office. And, you know, it really only takes a firm hand on the back to get that point across a couple times. Yeah, you wanted to follow up. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And again, it is to teach them the principle, and it's also for their good. The correct posture, you don't have to bend over a bed, but just, we'll get into it in a moment, but the bum is like the organ of the body made for spanking. It is the most cushioned part of the body, and yet it's so sensitive. It's wonderful. All the pain and none of the lasting damage. And so they may not recognize it, but you want the spank to land there. And so if you're fighting, you're putting yourself in harm's way. And so I'm not only teaching a principle, I'm trying to protect you. Because, again, if dad takes a wind up, that on bone is going to hurt. Okay. All right, let's get through some of this material here. Reason spanking does not work. Okay, I'm going to speed up through this because there is material that I want us to get through. Number one, a lack of consistency. Right? You have to be consistent. And by that we mean, don't let some disobedience go scot-free. All disobedience. And that means disobedience that is not all the way, that is not right away, and that is not with a joyful attitude. So partial obedience, delayed disobedience, and begrudging obedience all gets disciplined. You must be consistent. Related, you must be persistent. You must carry on no matter how long you have to do this so that the child realizes there is no breaking point with mom and dad. If I keep pushing them, I will keep getting the consequences. It's not like, oh, after three times they get tired and they give up. So all I need to do is get through three times. Persistency is important as well. This comes from a book by Bruce Ray, Withhold Not Correction. He says, when disobedience is met with uncomfortable consequences, they learn that God has built the principle of sowing and reaping into the world. Sorry, that's actually Ted Tripp. But that's the point. You want them to learn, you sow, you reap. Right? You sow disobedience, you reap consequences. The other reason why spanking fails is lack of effectiveness. Like, it must actually hurt. If it's not hard enough, it doesn't help. And a lack of righteousness. By that we mean your sin, your folly. Again, your anger can undo all of the effectiveness of the discipline. If you've done everything else, textbook, perfect in conformity to what God wants you to do, but you just add in your own sinful anger, it's going to undo all of the good. So I cannot stress that enough. If you need to wait 10 minutes, 30 minutes before you administer the consequence just so that your heart is right, do that, all right? Do that, because your anger can undo all the good. On the lack of effectiveness, I do think I have it later in the notes. It's one of the points that I'm going to disagree with Ted Tripp on. It's interesting. Ted Tripp wrote that book, Shepherding Your Child's Heart, and it's kind of like the groundbreaking book. All the other books I'm going to recommend build off of that book. I think sometimes improve what he did or say it in more helpful ways, but his is groundbreaking. So we really owe a great debt of gratitude to Ted Tripp. But he speaks about spanking without clothes on. So he would actually recommend pulling down the pants and even pulling down the underwear. And he says very plainly that that should change when, and his reason is you don't want the clothing to cushion the consequence. He wants it to be effective. He wants it to hurt. And so he says, by the time your child is able to care for their own hygiene, like by the time they're able to bathe themselves, even in their intimate areas, you probably want to recognize their sensitivity, their privacy, and so you can keep the underwear on. I don't think that's always necessary, right? So I think a nappy can certainly shield the child from an effective spank. With nappies, you have the hands. You also have the thighs, by the way, which also work. But when we're dealing with toddlers and they're now often in underpants and not nappies, I'll show you the instrument that we use. I promise you, your light pair of pants are not going to shield you from that. I'm gonna smack you with that. You're still going to feel it, okay? I will adjust accordingly. Like, I will hit you harder for that. In fact, sometimes I remind our children, they fool around in the bath. I'm like, you know you're not wearing clothes now, right? This is not smart. Think this through. Because I'll spank you right here. Okay, but it just means that you adjust how you spank, what you spank with. So obviously if they're wearing pants, you can't use your hand because that will make it ineffective. So you do what you think is good and right. I don't think it's necessary to strip my kid down naked in order to spank them. I don't even think it's necessary to strip them down to underwear, though we have in the past. So if the kid is wearing, our boys at the moment have got these like double insulated winter things that's just like the sun is hugging their legs. It's so warm. I wish they made it for adults. But that thing, I mean, nothing is getting through that thing. It's multiple layers. So then we will pull it down. But then again, I will adjust according. I will soften my swing instead of hardening my swing. So just make it effective. How you do that, though, I think is largely up to you to discern. This is not the course for it because it comes into the later years. But there is a time that you need to stop giving spanks. And with girls, it happens sooner than with guys, right? Because of privacy things, because of sensitivity to the body. And so I just think when we are not requiring our children to strip down, we get a little bit more runway, especially with boys. I don't want to see your bum any more than you want to show your bum to me. Okay. All right. When not to spank. Number one, for childish behavior. Childishness is not the same as foolishness. We don't discipline immaturity. We train it, right? There's a lot that you need to discern there. And sometimes I have to, sometimes you don't always see eye to eye. And then you have to have your roles really well ironed out where I might say to Jessica, you know what? I actually think that was an immaturity thing. And again, I think the principle is err on the side of mercy, right? So if it's not blatant disobedience, I think I would rather err on the side of mercy than err on the side of harshness. We don't discipline, we don't spank an inability to perform. So perform academically, perform athletically. If your kid gets C's at school and they've done their best, that's okay. If they don't make the sports team, that's okay, all right? So we don't discipline a failure to perform. We don't discipline accidents. Right? Though it may be so much hassle after the day that you've had when the kid knocks the juice and it goes flying everywhere. Now there's a sticky mess that you need to clean up. You're like, you're going to get it now. But that's just sinful and selfish. It was an accident. They're two. What did you expect? I'm almost 42 and I still spill my drinks from time to time, right? The church floor after we leave on a Sunday is evidence that adults spill their drinks from time to time. So let's give our little ones a break.
If you could see something happening and you told them to put it down, and then the accident.
Yes. Because now it is a matter of disobedience. So like, for instance, we will discipline accidents that hurt our children. I still remember the time that Matthew was bouncing on his bed and fell and cut open the side of his head because he caught it on the windowsill. Okay? So, I mean, there's blood everywhere. Head wounds just bleed. So we patch him up, get him to the doctor, get him stitched up, get him home. You're like, all right, you learned a hard lesson. Here's your spank. Because not only was that an accident that got you hurt, but you've been told not to do that. That is a rule in our house. And so you get the consequence, not only the natural consequence, but the consequence for disobeying. And another one, I mean, Micah ran through our sliding door the last time that I was overseas. I mean, just gloss everywhere. It was an accident. But in our house, because we foresee those things, we have a rule. You may not run in the house. Had he been walking, he would have just lightly bumped into the sliding door. But because he was running, because he was breaking one of our rules, you've disobeyed. And so he got the consequence for that too. So absolutely, once you warn, now it's a matter of disobedience. Yeah.
So the natural consequence, is that like, can you justify it as the actual, okay, discipline to the actual thing? Like, cutting open and stuff, okay, that was quite harsh, so let's rather not do physical harm further a little bit.
No, I think, look, we'll talk about it more. I do think there are occasions that you can teach your child mercy. But I think the general rule is that that should be disciplined as well, because your child needs to learn two lessons. You're not wanting them to walk away from jumping on the bed saying, oh, I just need to learn to jump better, right? Or run through the house more carefully. That's not the primary lesson. The primary lesson is, I need to obey. And the natural consequence does not instill that lesson in their hearts. You judge, though. You're the parent. You have to give an account to the Lord. There are times that you can go to your child and say, let me use another example. You just bought your kid a brand new toy. It's their birthday present. They've waited a whole year for it. It's their treasure. It might even be their idol. You warn them not to do something, and they break it. First day, it's gone. It's destroyed. We had a friend, kid got a remote control car. First 60 seconds, drove it into the pool. All right? You might see the overwhelming sadness and decide that adding another consequence to that is going to exasperate your child. But I think that should be the exception, right? You need to discern those exceptional acts of mercy as a parent and make sure that you are doing that not as the norm, but as the exception, because otherwise you're teaching them the opposite of what they should learn.
Is it then that you actually then afterwards put them on, talk them through it, why this happened, don't do it?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And then, okay, let's not do the spanking, but at least please don't do this again, this is why.
Absolutely. And I want my kids, if I'm extending them mercy, I want them to know that it is mercy, right? So we've had days, and I'm not saying I never do it, we've had days where it's one of those days. We're racking up the consequences. And our kids are there, and they're just terrified because here's another round. And I'll say to the boys, would you like Dad to have mercy on you? And I mean, obviously, they're like, yes. But, A, I want them to know it's mercy, meaning you don't deserve this. And B, I want to teach them what is the appropriate response to mercy. And I will tell them, the right thing for you to do now is to change your behavior. If you want to thank Dad for mercy, then you respond with obedience. If you're going to use this as an opportunity to disobey more, I'm going to give you the consequence and the one that I withheld. And they know that. So how you give mercy is also important. You must teach them, right? They can't just go, oh, that was weird. That time I didn't get it. Right, exactly. So give them the explanation. Help them understand that there's a lesson. Because you do want them to know God is a God of justice and mercy. So teach them when you give them that opportunity. Okay? All right, when to spank. Let's run through this quickly. Take your child to a private place where he can be spoken with in privacy. I think that's really important. I don't think it's an absolute. Again, there are some circumstances where, like if all three kids are in on it, privacy from what? You're all getting hiding, okay? Let's do it. But you don't want to shame them. You don't want to embarrass them, all right? And so I'll frequently have to talk to our kids now that they're older, and you know, one will be like, oh, is Micah getting a consequence? I'm like, that's none of your business, and that's not something for you to rejoice in, all right? And so you do it in private so you don't shame them, you don't embarrass them. Your shame, or their shame, sorry, is not a tool for you to manipulate them. Number two, discuss with a child what they've done wrong and your responsibility to spank them. I think, honestly, if there's one thing that I can emphasize for you with the spanking, with that element of physical chastisement, it's it must be accompanied by speech. It's not enough to just come in and go, bah, 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 bah. Don't do that again. That's not teaching. That's not training. That's just beating your child, all right? The pain is an instrument to emphasize the teaching you've done with words. This is what you have done wrong. And so, in other words, a couple of things. It must be attached to a specific thing that they've done wrong. You can't just discipline them because, you know what, I've had it. Like, I've just had it with you. Enough is enough. It's been a bad day, and my thermostat is now gone. Okay? So it has to be a specific thing. No general purpose spanking. You also want the child to acknowledge what they've done wrong. In the beginning, you're going to have to teach them because they're young. But as they're able to communicate with you, you want them to see. All right? You don't want them to feel like this is an injustice that they're suffering. And so because of that, you have to take the time. And honestly, good discipline, biblical discipline, takes time. It's why you can't just say to your friend on the phone, hey, listen, give me 30 seconds. I'm just going to go whip my child. I'll be back with you now. Right? This is multiple minutes. We're talking 5 minutes at best, 10, 15 sometimes if you have to. You're sitting them down. Is that the way that I asked you to do this? Did you do it with the right attitude? Can you see how you disobeyed Daddy? How does God want you to behave? Does He want you to be obedient? You're using those questions. You're helping them understand. They must come as much as possible to see their own wrongdoing so that they understand the consequence to be a just consequence of what they have done wrong. And then, I think it's really helpful, Ginger Hubbard is good at this, to say, you must teach your child that the reason why you're spanking them is because you love them. So it is my responsibility to spank you. You know, Daddy, God wants Daddy to teach you to love Him and to walk in His ways. And the best way that I can do that is by spanking you to teach you that sin is ugly and sin is wrong. And so I'm going to do this because I love you. Telling them ahead of time is helpful. Third, guide the child in thinking through what they should have done. Again, that's helpful. This is where it's more like a mini counseling session, right? So biblical counseling is super helpful for parenting because you take all of that and you dumb it down to a three-year-old's level and you go, all right, do you see that you love your Lego more than you love Mom right now? Because you're choosing your Lego over obedience to Mom. What should you have done? I think you should have left your Lego and obeyed Mommy and then asked if you may go back and finish the game. So you're not only showing them what they've done wrong, you're helping them see what they should have done right. And again, I think that's one of the areas that we don't spend enough time on because we focus so much on just being diligent with the smacks. As long as we get our smacks in, we've done our job. But that's wrong. That's not biblical discipline. I said to you earlier, we train our children in the discipline and instruction of the Lord, and those overlap in the Greek language. It's hard to separate them out. I think that's one of the reasons why Paul chose that, because even if one emphasizes more of the practical and the other more of the instructional, they're meant to go hand in hand. The spanking must accompany the speaking, right? Fourth, use the proper instruments, and all that we mean there is in the early years, I think a hand is appropriate. It helps you gauge. You get your own tactile feedback. There are times that I've spanked our children and be like, wow, my hand really stings. It was maybe on the borderline of too hard, all right? Whereas as our kids get older, so for us, by the time we are, I think usually around 3 to 4, depending on the child, right? And again, children are different. So you're going to make a different determination for a different child. One child will have such a soft heart, they'll see the spanking instrument and they will just melt in repentance. Okay, that was great. If that's your first child, then you're in for a surprise in your second. Okay? Others are like, they meet the challenge. They're like, oh, bring it on. All right? How do I level up from that? Where's the belt? Do a chain, I dare you. Okay? Yes.
What do you mean?
So I had it with Evan where sometimes I'd give him a spanking and he'd just look at me. No reaction, no nothing.
That's probably not hard enough, to be honest.
No, and the subsequent times I spank him harder and still didn't get the reaction until I was like, not certain if I should even step it up harder still.
And either harder or more. He may be the kid that you can't just get away with one. You need to do multiples. It must inflict pain. And so if he looks at you like, I can take that, you know, it's like the child who's foolish enough, and we've had it, is like, huh, that didn't hurt. You're like, oh, thank you for telling me. Let me address that error on my part. It must hurt. And honestly, you'll see one of the points is preparing your kid, all right? You're going to get three spanks or you're going to get one spank. But there's a little asterisk next to that. Because sometimes if they move and I haven't judged properly, it's like a light tap. I'm like, okay, that doesn't count. Bend. We're going again. Yeah. So without seeing it, that would be the first thing that I would tell you to consider. Otherwise, I mean, you need to look at how, if he's that defiant, that he's just like, I will not cry. If he's experiencing the pain, that's sufficient. But if he's like daring you, like, I will not cry, and that'll be my way of defying you, then you're going to need to train him in his hard attitudes. But the first thing I would try is make sure it's probably not hard enough or frequent enough. Okay. Yo. Yeah, please.
Sometimes we struggle with folk who looking at.
Okay.
So we'll spank him, and when we try to talk to him, he like refuses our contact.
Okay.
And that's very frustrating because you're trying to get a point across, obviously.
Right.
Is that something that you will spank for again?
Sure. So to begin with, I would speak to him. All right. Yeah. And we've had our kids do something similar, and I will say to them, so one of the things that I require in our house, a couple just simple things. If I speak to you, especially in a corrective tone or an instructional tone, so not when we're laughing and having fun and engaging conversation, if I'm like, Micah, do this, I expect a yes, dad, in response. Not yeah, okay, sure, or yes. It is yes, dad. That is how you show me respect. The other thing is you meet me in the eye. So you look at me when I talk to you. That's how you show me respect. And so when we spank our kids, if they're not willing to make eye contact, that's when I'll say, hey, listen, Matthew, Dad wants to talk to you now. You need to show me the respect of looking at me when I do that. And hopefully that's sufficient to correct him. So Vilku, Mommy wants to talk to you now. I'm not angry with you. I love you. But I have something important that I need to teach you. I want you to look at me. If talking to him doesn't change, then warn him. I think it's helpful to warn your child when there's a new standard they're introduced to. You can say, Vilku, God wants you to show Mommy respect. And one of the ways you do that is by looking at me when I talk to you. I would like you to look at me now. If you are going to ignore Mommy, you're going to get another spank. So warn him of the standard. And then if he persists, you are going to have to eventually get to the point where you're like, all right, well, I mean, there's another spank because this is not okay. We're not going to end this with you stewing in this defiant attitude towards me. Yeah. So definitely. Okay.
Sorry, just with that, when you discuss with a child who's done wrong, do you do that before? Because, like, I think with Vilku as well, you'll avoid eye contact after the spanking. Mm-hmm. So we explain to him what he's done wrong before, mm-hmm. and afterwards we'll tell him we love him and this is the mm-hmm. reason why we need to do this, mm-hmm. and that's when he won't look us in the eye.
Right.
But so should we move that? Telling him why we need to do it before spanking him, or do you think?
Well, you can tell him why before, sure, but there's always going to be conversation afterwards because you're doing the right thing. You do want to restore the relationship afterwards. And so it's really important that he engage with you on that level. So we'll get to that now. So you want to administer the spanking, use it on the child's bum, and then take time to reconcile. So here in the middle of the page is what we're looking at. This is page 11. And I think, again, this is one of the neglected elements in our discipline that separates it from just beating your child, right? After you spank the child, you want to hug them, embrace them, kiss them, even while they're still sobbing in the pain, right? And you can tell them, I love you. I'm not angry with you. I don't enjoy seeing you in pain. You don't like getting consequences. Daddy doesn't like giving you consequences, right? Also, sorry, I should have mentioned this before. We, in our house, will more often than not call them consequences. Because, and for two reasons. One is I think it's more biblical. You know, I'm trying to convey the concept. But to be honest, I think spanking can still do that. The main reason is so that we can say it in public. So that we can be out in public and I can say, when we get home, Daddy will give you a consequence. No one's going to bat an eyelid at that. That could be, you're not watching TV. If I say, when we get home, I am going to give you a hiding. Everyone is going to raise an eyebrow and go like, I don't think you're supposed to beat your child. Anyway, we talk about a consequence. But as they're sobbing through the consequence, love them, care for them, restore the relationship with them, help them understand this wasn't retribution. This wasn't mommy trying to get back at you for what you did, right? This wasn't daddy demonstrating his anger towards you. But if there is incomplete restitution, I think this is what some of your questions are revolving around. You need to check your spirit and check their spirit. Check your spirit. Have you handled him roughly? Have you been out of control? Have you sinned against him in a way, in the way that you've disciplined? If you've brought unholy anger on this holy mission, you must confess your sin and seek forgiveness. So check your spirit. Related to that, by the way, your example is important for your child, even your example of when you sin. I'm not trying to ask you to go out and sin so that you can do this more, but when you do invariably sin, your child will learn as much from you when you repent as when you live righteously. There have been times that I've had to call our boys afterwards and say, you were disobedient, you were disrespectful, and that is still wrong, and we've dealt with that, but Daddy was also wrong in how I shouted at you. That was my anger and my sin. Please, will you forgive me? And that is as important as dealing with their sin, right? So check your own spirit, and if necessary, ask for their forgiveness. You know what? Mommy was really angry when I was yelling at you now, and I'm sorry. That was not the right way to do that. Then check his spirit. Is there anger as they reject your discipline? And sometimes that is yelling and screaming. Other times, I think this is more what Armand and Nina are describing, that kind of passive, or even you, Jean, the defiant, I will, you know, the kind of, I will hold my head up high. You will not break me. That's defiance. That's anger in a different form. That's bottled up anger. It may not be blowing up anger, bottled up anger. Maybe he's trying to manipulate you. Maybe he's trying to punish you. Okay, I will withdraw my affection from you. If you're going to do that to me, I am not going to be affectionate towards you. That is sinful. Sinful attitudes need discipline. So we're going to correct them. We're going to teach them. Make sure they understand. Right? We don't expect them to know intuitively, but I'm going to teach you. And if I teach you, if I instruct you and you continue in this, I'm going to discipline you. Because now it's not a matter of ignorance. Now it's a matter of willful disobedience. And if that is the case, it's like snakes and ladders. You hit a snake, we're back to square one. Let's start over with the discipline, right? Now we're going to discipline your attitude. Because the reason, and I'll say this to our kids often, the reason you're experiencing pain is because you made a choice. I did not choose this. You chose this. The moment you chose disobedience instead of obedience. You chose the path of foolishness instead of the path of wisdom. On the path of foolishness, there is consequence for disobedience. You chose, not me. And so if you're going to have a bad attitude about the consequences that you chose, we're going to discipline that. Because again, I'm not here being cruel. I'm doing what God asked me to do. I'm being obedient. You're the one who's being disobedient. Okay? And then finally, require that the child make restitution. So if the kid has taken his brother's toy, make him give it back. If he has bitten his sister, make him give her a hug and ask for her forgiveness. Whatever the case may be. When Micah ran through the sliding door, all of the pocket money that he had to save had to be given to me to cover the cost of replacing that. It was a hard lesson. He learned more from that than he did from the spanking. Okay? All right. You can see some alternatives over here, worldly alternatives, bribery, emotional manipulation, timeouts, contracts. If you do this, I will do this, or extended anger, punishments. We are running out of time, so we're not going to go through all of that. I really want us to have time for Q&A. And so I'm going to skip to the lost page for now, and then if necessary, reference the outstanding pages in the Q&A, or if Q&A wraps up early, then we'll come back and finish that out. But on the lost page, there is an incredible illustration that comes from a book called The Heart of Anger by Lou Priolo. And he has transliterated a Greek word in a very weird way as gymnazo. It is the Greek word gymnazo, right? Which sounds like going to gym. That is what we're talking about. But listen to this. This is meant, so gymnazo is that idea of training. And so he makes an incredible point about how we should be thinking of training our children, especially in these younger years. So listen to this. The gymnazo principle can be illustrated by the example of a blacksmith who's training an apprentice. Apprenticeships are not as popular today as they were during the early days of our nation when Benjamin Franklin, for example, served as an apprentice to his older brother. Then it was not uncommon for the apprentice to live with and be provided for and be the subject of the master craftsman. An apprenticeship was a thorough, intense training that usually lasted for 7 years. Basically, it was training by practice. Practice and more practice until the apprentice got it right. The master craftsman would likely first explain and demonstrate the equipment. Then he would allow the apprentice to observe him going through the entire process of making a horseshoe, from lighting the forge to shoeing the horse's hoof with the finished product, explaining each procedure in great detail. After a number of observations, the master craftsman would allow the apprentice to help with some of the procedure. Instructing him, the master would allow the apprentice to try the procedure. He would correct him on the spot should he make a mistake and require him to do it again until he got it right. The master may have stood behind his apprentice, holding or gripping his hands over the hands of the apprentice, as they would hold the iron in the fire until the iron had just the right glow of red. Then hand in hand, the master craftsman and the apprentice would quickly bring the iron to the anvil. And hand in hand, the master would demonstrate to the apprentice just where to hammer the iron and just how hard to strike it. Then he would put it back into the fire and so on until the horseshoe was complete. After a few exercises of this hands-on training, the master would be ready to allow the apprentice to try the procedure by himself. Still standing behind his student, he would observe the apprentice's work, noticing every detail of workmanship. Then as soon as a mistake was made, immediately he would say, "No, this way." Again, grasping the hand of the apprentice, he would show him precisely how to correct his mistake. That's the gymnazo principle in action. And then he goes on to say, imagine what it would be like if the master craftsman had simply explained the procedure one time, and when the apprentice made his first mistake, the master said, "Wrong! No dinner for you tonight. You'd better improve tomorrow." "That would be cruel, unmerciful, and a violation of education," you say. Yet this is the way many Christian parents discipline their children. That was disrespectful, they say, as they cruelly slapped the child across the face with the backside of a hand, while feeling good about the fact that they've identified exactly what the child did wrong, being disrespectful. But the Gymnazo principle maintains that you haven't disciplined a child properly until you have brought him to the point of repentance by requiring him to practice the biblical alternative to sinful behavior. This would involve not just asking forgiveness for the disrespect, not just identifying the sin by name, which are two essential steps, but also by responding with a respectful alternative to the disrespect, using the appropriate words, tone of voice, and nonverbal communication. I think it's a really compelling illustration of the fact that biblical discipline is actually a lot more thorough, a lot longer, a lot harder than what we might imagine. It's not just about spanking bums and making sure that you do that throughout the day. It's about training. And so it's disciplined instruction and instructional discipline, and they go hand in hand. Your words matter as much as your spanks. And so we have a longer, harder, but also better method of training our children through discipline. Okay, why don't you stretch your legs? Take 5 minutes. I'm going to go find my wife who's meant to be with me, and then we'll convene in 5 minutes' time.